This is the Sunday Catholic Word, a production of Catholic Answers, the only podcast to look at the Sunday Mass readings from an apologetics perspective.
Hey, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the Sunday Catholic Word, a podcast where we reflect on the upcoming Sunday Mass readings and pick out the details that are relevant for explaining and defending our Catholic faith. I'm Carlo Broussard, staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers, and the host for this podcast. In this episode, the major apologetical topic that we're going to focus on is Peter and the papacy. And there are only two details in the gospel taken from John 1, 35 through 42 that enter this sort of discussion. So just two details to focus on here. The first is the fact that Andrew followed Jesus before Peter. And the second is Jesus' promise that Simon's new name would be Cephas or Cephas. Here's the gospel in full. John was standing with two of his disciples, and as he watched Jesus walk by, he said, "Behold the Lamb of God." The two disciples heard what he had said and followed Jesus. Jesus turned and saw them following him and said to them, "What are you looking for?" They said to him, "Rabbi," which translated means teacher, "where are you staying?" He said to them, "Come and you will see." So they went and saw where Jesus was staying, and they stayed with him that day. It was about 4 PM. Andrew, the brother of Simon Peter, was one of the two who heard John and followed Jesus. He first found his own brother Simon and told him, "We have found the Messiah," which is translated Christ. Then he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon the son of John. You will be called Cephas," or Cephas, which is translated Peter. Let's start with the fact that Andrew followed Jesus before Peter, having to go get Peter and bring him to Jesus. Now, why is this significant? Well, this detail is significant because it sheds light on another detail that's relevant for Peter's role as leader of Christ's church. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 2 through 4, Matthew lists the 12 apostles. But interestingly, he starts the list by saying the names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and then goes on to list the others, Andrew his brother, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, etc. Now, the detail here to zero in on is Matthew's use of the term first. The question arises, what does Matthew intend to convey with this term? Does he intend to suggest an order in a list? Well, that doesn't seem right because he doesn't speak of a second, third, fourth, fifth, etc. Maybe he's using it to suggest a chronological order in which the apostles were called. Matthew does say in chapter 1, verse 1, just a few verses before he uses the term protost, which is the Greek term for first there, he says this in 1:1, "And Jesus called to him 12 disciples." So maybe Matthew's trying to list in chronological order the order in virtue of which the apostles were called by Jesus. But that can't be right, because as the detail from our gospel reading for this upcoming Sunday proves, Peter wasn't called first. That privilege belongs to Andrew. So Matthew can't be listing the apostles in the chronological order in virtue of which they were called. That can't be the meaning of the term first, or in Greek, protos, that Matthew intends here. So the question now is, well, what could Matthew possibly mean by the term protos, or first? Well, there's another meaning of the term besides a chronological order. As Barclay M. Newman points out in his Concise Greek-English Dictionary of the New Testament, protos can also suggest a primacy of place, like first and foremost. So here's the reasoning. Since Matthew can't be intending the other possible meanings of the term, a list or the chronological ordering of calling, he must be intending this meaning, that is primacy of place, or first and foremost. So Matthew believes Peter, therefore, as having a primacy of place among the 12. He's the first and foremost or most prominent apostle. This suggests Peter was the leader of the apostolic college. And that's simply what we mean when we say Peter was the first pope. Now, the second detail worth highlighting here for discussions about Peter and the papacy is Jesus' promise that Simon would be called Cephas. As John records in verse 42, Jesus looked at Simon and said, "You are Simon, the son of John. You will be called Cephas," which is translated Peter. Now, according to the famous Greek-English lexicon of the New Testament and early Christian literature, popularly referred to as BDAG, an abbreviation based on the first letters of the names of the editors and translators, Cephas, or Cephas in Greek, is an Aramaic word for rock. It's just the Aramaic word was preserved in the Greek, and it means rock. New Testament scholar D.A. Carson concurs, writing in his, The Gospel According to John, quote, "Doubtless in Aramaic the expression was kepha, a word meaning rock," close quote. That's on page 156. Now, notice John says Cephas is translated Peter. The Greek word for Peter there is Petros. BDAG affirms this when it states that Petros is the Greek form of Simon's new surname and was, quote, "from the beginning probably thought of as the Greek equivalent of the Aramaic Cephas," close quote. Now, why is this significant? Well, that's the Greek word, Petros, that is. That's the Greek word used in Matthew 16, 18, when Jesus says to Simon, "You are Peter, you are Petros, and on this rock," in Greek Petra, "I will build my church." The hotly debated question here is whether Jesus intends Peter to be the metaphorical rock, Petra, upon which he promises to build his church. And here's where the equivalence that Petros has with Kephas comes into play. Given that Simon's new name in Greek, Petros, is the equivalent of the Aramaic Cephas, which means rock, according to BDAG, it becomes clear that Peter is meant to be the rock of the church, the metaphorical rock upon which Christ promises to build his church. If Peter were not the metaphorical rock, well, then the pun on his new name, rock, and the metaphorical rock would be merely accidental, and thus beyond the intention of Jesus. But if such a pun were not intended by Jesus, well, then why in the world would Jesus change Simon's name to Petros, or rock, in the first place? Surely, Jesus is not giving this new name of rock to Peter because of his steadfast character. The Gospels are clear that Peter is anything but steadfast in character. He's all over the map, right? He is definitely movable as opposed to immovable. If Peter were not the metaphorical rock, then his name change would be futile or pointless. But surely we don't want to say his name change was futile. Therefore, we should conclude that Peter is the foundational rock of the church, given the new name, given the name change of being rock. Within the very immediate context of speaking of building his church upon rock, Jesus must intend the metaphorical rock to be Peter. The pun has point. It has a point. It has a purpose. Peter's the rock of the church. Even the late Lutheran New Testament scholar Oscar Coleman agrees with our conclusion here. In his editorial contribution to the term rock in Gerard Kittle's Theological Dictionary of the New Testament, Coleman writes the following. "The obvious pun," notice he's appealing to the pun there, "which has made its way into the Greek text suggests a material identity between Petra, the metaphorical rock upon which Christ promises to build his church, and Petros, that is Peter, as it's impossible to differentiate strictly between the two words. Petros himself is this Petra, not just his faith or his confession. The idea of the reformers that he's referring to the faith of Peter is quite inconceivable, but there's no reference here to the faith of Peter. Rather, the parallelism of thou art rock and on this rock I will build shows that the second rock can only be the same as the first. It is thus evident that Jesus is referring to Peter, to whom he has given the name rock. To this extent, Roman Catholic exegesis is right, and all Protestant attempts to evade this interpretation are to be rejected." That's from pages, those are excerpts from pages 98, 107, and 108 of Kittle's Theological Dictionary of the New Testament. New Testament professor at Asbury Theological Seminary, Craig Keener, argues similarly, stating in his The Gospel of Matthew, a socio-rhetorical commentary, on page 426, quote, "Jesus plays on Simon's nickname, Peter, which is roughly the English rocky. Peter is rocky, and on this rock, Jesus would build his church." It's clear the metaphorical rock is Peter, given Peter's name, which means rock in Greek, Petros. Furthermore, imagine the exegetical nightmare that would come with saying Peter is not the metaphorical rock. We'd have to say something like this: Simon, who is now named rock, who is the most immediate and natural referent for the demonstrative this and the phrase upon this rock, and the one to whom Jesus gives several blessings in the immediate context, both before and after, has nothing to do with the metaphorical rock. That is, Peter has nothing to do with the metaphorical rock upon which Christ promises to build his church. That just doesn't make sense, right? Now, someone will inevitably counter and say, well, if Jesus intended Peter to be the metaphorical rock, then shouldn't Matthew have used Petros in the second instance when referring to the metaphorical rock instead of a different word, Petra? I deal with this objection in my book, Meeting the Protestant Response, How to Answer Common Comebacks to Catholic Arguments. Here are a few possible reasons why Matthew doesn't simply use the existing word Petros in the second instance as well as the first. One is that to Matthew's audience, Petra, which is the feminine noun for rock in Greek, would have been the more familiar term for rock. New Testament scholar R.T. France comments on this lack of familiarity with Petros, the masculine name for rock, among Matthew's readers. So France writes, the masculine noun Petros occurs infrequently in classical poetic Greek to mean a stone, a broken piece of a rock, though the distinction from Petra is not consistently observed. But Petros, as a common noun, is unlikely to have been familiar to Matthew's readers, as it is not found in the Septuagint, except twice in 2 Maccabees, or in the New Testament and related literature. So that's Francis' explanation there, that the reason why Matthew would not have used Petros in the second instance is because Petros was unfamiliar for Matthew's readers. Petra was the more familiar term. So it's likely that Matthew uses Petra, the more common noun, to refer to the metaphorical rock because Petros was less common. But here's another possible explanation. By using Petra, Matthew might have intended to make a connection with other teachings from Jesus. In chapter 7 of his gospel, Matthew records Jesus' parable of the wise man who built his house upon the rock, there in verse 24 of chapter 7. And the Greek word for rock there is Petra. And when the winds blew and the floods came, the house didn't fall because it had been founded on the rock, the Petra, there in verse 25. So it suggested perhaps Matthew intended to echo the parable. Jesus is the wise man building his house, the church, on the rock, Petra. And of course, given the context and Simon's new name, which is Petros, which means rock, that's Peter. As France notes, Peter is to be a rock. And one important function of a rock, as Matthew 7:24 through 7:27 has reminded us, is to provide a firm foundation for a building. So on this rock, Jesus will build his church, and it will be forever secure. Now, still another possible reason for the use of different words and why Matthew doesn't use Petros in the second instance is to preserve the distinction between a proper noun, Petros as a proper name, and a common noun, in this case, Petra, as a metaphor. If Matthew had used Petros in the second instance, it would have read, you are Peter, and upon this Peter, I will build my church. It would have been a bit awkward to use a proper name this way, right? Using a common noun in the second instance is more natural. And I think that's one of the best explanations as to why Matthew doesn't use Petros in the second instance. He's trying to preserve the distinction between the proper name and the common noun. So given that we can provide plausible reasons as to why there might be a difference in words without denying that the rock refers to Peter, the argument that Peter is not the rock, simply based on the use of Petros and Petra or different words, that objection kind of fails. That objection does fail. Well, my friends, that does it for this episode of the Sunday Catholic Word. The gospel for this upcoming Sunday, second Sunday of Ordinary Time, Year B, gives us an opportunity to reflect on the biblical revelation of the papacy, seeing Peter as the first pope via his role as first or chief among the apostles, most prominent among the apostles, and his role as the foundational rock of Christ's church on earth. He is the visible principle and source of unity for members of Christ's church. Wherever the foundation is, there's the true church of Christ. And if Peter is that foundation, that visible foundation on earth, well, then it follows wherever Peter is, there's the true church of Christ. Now, for us today, 2,000 years removed, it's wherever the successor to Peter is, there's the foundation of Jesus Christ. Since Peter died as the Bishop of Rome, the question now becomes, wherever the successor to Peter as the Bishop of Rome is, there's the true church of Jesus Christ. And of course, That's Pope Francis. So, my friends, as always, thank you for subscribing to the podcast. Please be sure to tell others about it. Invite them to subscribe, and they can do so at SundayCatholicWord.com. We'd appreciate that. You might also want to check out the other great podcasts in our Catholic Answers Podcast Network, Cy Kellett's Catholic Answers Focus, Trent Horn's The Council of Trent, Joe Heschmeyer, Shameless Popery, and Jimmy Akin's The Daily Defense, all of which can be found at Catholic.com. Well, I hope you have a blessed second Sunday of Ordinary Time, my friends. Please, as you're at Mass, please remember myself and my family and our apostolate here at Catholic Answers. Lift us up so that God will continue to bless us in this ministry. God bless you all.
Thank you for listening to the Sunday Catholic Word. Find more great shows by visiting CatholicAnswersPodcasts.com or just search for Catholic Answers wherever you listen to podcasts.